Welcome to Lesbians Who Write with Claire Lydon and T.B. Markinson. Conversations about writing and lesbian fiction. Join us as we draw back the curtain on the writer's life.
Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Lesbians Who Write. This week we're going to be talking about writing books in a series. Joining me, Little Miss Sunshine, Claire Lydon, is the Emperor of Doom, my co-host, T.B. Markinson. Hello, T.B., how are you today?
I'm the Emperor of Doom, and you're Little Miss Sunshine. You live in a country where the sun doesn't shine.
It's very true. And as I look out my window today, it is white cloud. I was at a party last night, and I was talking to an Australian lady, and she was saying that she's moving back to Australia because she can't bear all the white cloud in the UK. So tell me about your week. How's your week been?
Well, remember last week when we talked, and I was like, oh, I'm going to outline two books, and I was really excited about the stories, and it was like all these fresh possibilities.
It was going to be your week of triumphantness.
Yeah, so this week I sat down at the laptop on Monday and I started writing a book, Fresh Words. Why do I do this job? I mean, it just drained the fun right out of it. Last week I was all excited and this week I'm like, oh, now it's work. that's my impression of typing. I'm not very good at the sound effects.
Could you do that sound effect of typing again? I enjoyed it.
Do-do-do-do-do. It's not as good as you're getting saved off driving off a cliff.
Like that, yeah. So welcome if you've never listened to this podcast before and you've just tuned in. We're just talking about the weather and then making sound effects at each other. We do actually do, you know, some useful things sometimes, don't we?
Every 10th episode, maybe we hit like on the nugget.
10, 12. So, but you had a positive week last week, did you, with all the outlining? It's just the writing that's...
It's one of those things, so outlining is kind of like a holiday for me, and like when you get back to the actual work, it's always a bit rough, but I've made progress. I've gotten the first two chapters done, and this is the book, remember the book where I wrote 30K of backstory and had to hit the delete button and start over? Mm-hmm. So I think at least now I have two chapters that I don't have to delete, so this is a positive.
Wow.
I'm moving in the right step.
You're on the up.
And then also this week, I just approved the first 15 minutes of the audio version of Reservations of the Heart. Mm-hmm. And I realized when I signed up my narrator to do this, I forgot. Because remember, I was like, I really need to start hiring an audio proofer because I'd never want to listen to the books again. Mm-hmm. I forgot we hired one already. I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to do this. So I'm really kind of looking at ways to cut back on the actual work that is very time consuming, and it's just not a productive use of my time. So I've cut back on the audio proofing, and I've cut back on some of the pages on iHeartLesbic that were just a lot of work for maintaining. So I'm trying to like figure out ways to spend more time writing because I clearly enjoy that so much. And then I had one day where I just completely pampered myself, and I was out of the office. I don't know if you survived or not. I'm thinking you did because I'm looking at you right now. But every time I go out of the office, you have like random questions for me and I don't respond right away.
And then I worry that, you know, you slipped on your bath mat, hit your head on the tub, and you're unconscious on your bathroom floor. If that ever happens, I'm going to be really upset then that it's my fault.
that's your image,
yeah,
of me when I'm on my own. You think I'm just going to be dead in a bathtub?
I didn't say dead. I said unconscious. I'm not wishing you dead, TB. I'd be really sad. And besides, this podcast just wouldn't be the same, just me.
No, it'd just be you making sound effects, not me trying. But for this day, I had breakfast with a friend. I had lunch with a different friend. I went and got my hair highlighted because I have gray hairs. And I took a fabulous photo, which I'll share with this week's episode of me getting my hair highlighted. And then I went to get a massage. And then I went to dinner. Like, it was just all a bunch of food. The bad food I'm not supposed to eat because I'm supposed to be losing weight this year, but fuck it for the day. You know, and I came home really relaxed and it was this nice day.
Well, I'm pleased. Yeah, well done on pampering yourself, because as we've said before, you can do this and you should do this.
So how has your week been?
Well, I've had a bit of massage as well, but they don't call it massage.
Wait, I thought you hated them.
I do. But obviously it's not called massage, it's called going to the physiotherapist. I didn't book in for a massage. However, I think I told you that, you know, you always comment that I'm always rolling my shoulders and like, and I think it's because over the last few weeks, maybe a couple of months, my right shoulder's got a lot tighter, and it's all to do with sitting at the laptop all the time. And I can feel it coming down from my shoulder and down my arm. And then a couple of weeks ago, like my arm, my forearm, it felt like I'd pulled all the muscles in it. So I went along to a physio, because I said, I think it's all connected, because it was all on one side of my body. And he said yes. So he did an assessment, and he said that it's all around the what he called the trap in my neck, which is not a good thing to have in your neck, is it? Something trapped. So he did some massage on my neck and my back, and then he massaged my forearm, and oh my God, it absolutely killed. But he's very good. He's very chatty. My physio, he's an Australian called Matt. So we've been, and he likes music, so we've been chatting about Australia and music. So he's good for distraction technique, because he just chats to me. And I like to chat. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. And so, like, you know, I just chat on, and then I forget he's causing me great pain.
The forearm is my least favorite part to get massaged, because it hurts. And then my calves. Oh, I hate my calves. Don't touch my calves. People, stop touching my legs.
If you ever see TB, do not massage her calves. So actually this last week, I had a right old week of let's get physical, as Olivia Newton-John once said. So I've been to the physio. So that was my second visit today to get my shoulder, neck, arms, hip sorted out. Because apparently it's all to do with my hip as well. My hip's out of line. My neck's all trapped. My forearm's all inflamed. He said it was angry today. And I said it is very angry. I also went to the optician for an eye test. And she told me to have breaks from the computer. Yeah, yeah. And the upshot is that I've got astigmatism, which I knew, but also blepharitis. So there's a let's have a party moment. Blepharitis is dandruff in your eyelids. Mmm, delicious. Apparently it just happens as you get older.
wait, is this something that's going to happen to, like, the majority of us?
I don't know if it's a majority, I don't know, but it just basically inflames your eyelids. So you have to, like, wash them with baby shampoo and sort of just do it constantly, get stuff in your... Like, my eye has just been... It felt all day today, it's felt like I've had an eyelash in my eye, but I haven't. It's just... But you know the good thing that happened about that? So I tweeted about it, all right? And guess who replied and told me ways to combat blepharitis?
The only name that came to mind was God. I don't know why.
The only name that came to my mind then was Patrick Swayze. No, Patrick Swayze did not reply from the other side. It was, in fact, Karen Coolmaker. The legend, the lesbian romance legend that is Karen Coolmaker, also suffers with blepharitis. They don't have this in the networking books, do they? Just put your ailments on Twitter, and legendary authors in your genre will reply with what they do to combat it. So thank you, Karen, if you're listening. And the other thing that happened this week was, so my area having a, so when you're over 50, you get a mammogram, right? You start getting mammograms, and I am not over 50. So, but they're doing a special trial for under 50s. So people in their 40s, basically, to come and have an early mammogram. And I won the prize. So this week I also went for a mammogram. Wow. What a week I've had.
Is that your first one?
Yeah.
I had one many years ago, and, man, I did not enjoy it.
It wasn't optimal, I've got to say.
Mine who did mine. She was training, and so my left one got squished 3 times because she couldn't get it right.
I wondered if the one who did mine squished mine a little bit tighter because I'd already pissed her off in the waiting room, because I decided, when I was in the waiting room that this would be a good start to a short story. If you walked in and the receptionist was an ex of yours or something, right?
Oh, yeah, that would be kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, so I was sitting in the mammogram waiting room and I'm thinking, this would be a good start to a short story. So I was going to take, so I started making notes about sort of how it felt in there, what it smelt like, what the temperature was like, so I could include it. And then I said to the woman, do you mind if I just take a photo just so that I can have something to remember it by? And the nurse shot out of the room, the nurse who was having coffee, and she went, no photos. And she said, well, why do you want to take a photo? And I said, well, because I'm a fiction writer and I was going to be, no photos. And then the woman before me, they swapped nurses. So I got the nurse who just shouted at me to do my mammogram. So I think she might have squashed my boob a bit more.
I think that's going to be the tagline of this episode.
So anyway, that was my physical week. But other than that, I've had quite a productive writing week, I suppose. Well, it started off very good and then it sort of went downhill a little bit because I've had other things to do. But I will pick it up because I've got, I'm planning, I was hoping to have written 50,000 words in January and I'm about 9,000 off. And tomorrow is the 31st. I've got to write 9,000 words today and tomorrow.
Are you actually aiming for it still?
I'll probably hit 45, I'm guessing. Today's just been a bit of an admin-y day. But on the plus side, the Christmas story is almost half written. And I'm really loving it. And I was telling my parents about it when I saw them this week because they were asking me what I'm writing. So I was telling them about it and they love it. You see, sometimes I tell them a story plot and they're just like, The book I'm just about to release in March, which I'll give you the title for in a minute. In fact, I'll give you the title now, TB, because...
Wait, I have to prepare because you've been kind of a tease about this one. So I got to like mentally prepare for the big moment. Can you make like a drum roll sound? Yeah. Because I can't.
I think my drum roll is going to sound like driving off a cliff, but I don't know. Let's do this. Does that work? Or did that just sound like me trying to smack a desk really unrhythmically? Anyway, drum roll. I can't do a drum roll.
Come on, you can do a drum roll.
I can't do a drum roll. So the book is cool. The book is going to be out in March and it is called Before You Say I Do.
That has a little bit of drama just in the title.
I know. It's a dramatic title, isn't it? So I'm excited for it. But you see, when I told my mum and dad this book, like when I saw them recently, and my mum immediately frowned and she said, are you going to be splitting up a marriage?
It's before the marriage.
Yeah. And I thought as well, it's not actually me doing it, mum. It's just fiction. But she wasn't very happy about it. Whereas when I told her about, I'm writing a Christmas story and it's set in a small town in Suffolk. And, you know, and I started explaining my inspiration and they loved it. They couldn't get enough of it. So
who hates Christmas?
Exactly. So I should write more Christmas books. That's why. That was my summation. And I think we've surmised that before, haven't we? Do you know another thing?
Right, 12 months of Christmas instead of 12 days. 12 months of Christmas.
So there you go. So that's been my week, really. Just been doing a bit of Christmas storying and getting all different parts of my body massaged and squashed and, yeah, dandruffy. So let's get on to comments. Comment monitor. Have you got any?
I have a few, actually. Okay, first of all, we got some comments from DJ Kelly. They both like the pod. They find us funny and insightful, especially about boob squish. We're really insightful about getting your boob squished. We had a comment from Carol from Lesbia Reviewed. She's been catching up on our episodes, and she thought our last episode on the cost of a book was brilliant. And then she also commented on our blogging episode, and she agrees that she finds the blogging experience very rewarding and has made great friends through her blog, so that's fantastic. Susie commented in our email. She said our episode of The Cost of Launching a Book was our best yet. Did you think it was our best yet?
Well, if Susie thinks so, then I'm all in agreement.
Yeah, thanks, Susie. And yeah, she also thanks us for our generosity with our knowledge. And then Nita Round, a fellow lesbian author, commented on our last episode and thought it was a great episode. She's in the process of relaunching as an indie, so I wish her the best of luck. And she's looking forward to the series episode because she writes series, so let's try not to fuck this one up because Nita's counting on us. Mira had a follow-up question on cover design, so I'm going to toss this one at you. Do we use designers for the whole thing, or do we have designers, like, do we ever hire an illustrator and then a separate graphic designer to put everything together?
My cover designers are generally very skillful and can take stock images and then, you know, design them in a way that is individual and made to measure. So, no, I've never used a separate cover illustrator. I trust my cover designers to be able to do it.
Do you instruct your cover designer to use certain fonts, or do you just let your cover designer do all of the actual hard work?
Generally, I just let them do all the hard work. But obviously, if it's romance, which is what we write in, you know, I kind of say, you know, swirly twirly fonts because, you know, they got to say love, haven't they?
Well, I can actually picture you just saying that. All right, so I have one final comment on my end, and it went to our... I finally checked our Lesbians Who Write email, and I was a little scared to open this email, I'm not going to lie, because I hadn't opened it since December. So I was like, oh, God, this is going to be terrible. Luckily, most of it was junk, but we had a delightful email from Sally. She thought my stolen boob story... We're back on boobs.
Okay.
We talk a lot about boobs. She thought my stolen boob story was hilarious, and she offered, if I could remember the store name, to go get me one and send me a boob, which is very nice. Unfortunately, I have no idea what store it was. There's a gajillion tourist shops in the French Quarter, but I do appreciate the effort. And she loves both of us and has read most of our books. So thank you very much, Sally, for your kindness and for being awesome.
Yes. Awesome Sally. That's your new name. I haven't got any comments, but I just thought I'd mention I was on a Twitter exchange yesterday with fellow lesbic authors, Claire Hyten Stevenson and Melissa Therese. Now, on this, I suggested to them that they, as they're both in the UK, they might like to come along to our meetup that we're having on Sunday, March the 8th in a London pub that is going to be set very soon. I am going to go on a recce to have a look at a few pubs, and I've got one in mind. So anyway, so I suggested to them that they might like to come along to this on March the 8th, and they were unaware that this was an open invitation to anyone who listens to the podcast, be you a writer or a listener or a reader, whatever. This is an open invitation to everyone. So if you're in London, or if you can get to London, on March the 8th, Sunday, March the 8th, we're going to be in a pub that we will reveal soon when I've said it. Come along and say hi and have a drink. And we're going to be in this pub from about 3 o'clock onwards. So come and have Sunday lunch.
Yeah, absolutely. Come say hi, and we'd love to meet you. All right, so this week we are going to discuss writing in a series. Now, Claire, I know you've written in a series. I have a question to start off. What made you start a series in the first place?
Ooh, that's a big and deep question, TB. I was thinking about this before we started this podcast, because I do think about these things beforehand. And I decided that so far I have never intended to write either of my series. So this is going to be really insightful. The next series I write, I'm going to plan it. But the first two series I've written, one is done, the All I Want series. That was six books and it's done. The London Romance series is ongoing, but neither of these series I intended to do. So London Calling came out, and that was my first book. Jess was the main character, and her best friend and flatmate was Kate. And so many people contacted me and said I'd love to know more about Kate's story that I then wrote Kate's story. And do you know, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking that Kate is, I think I put everything that I find cool and sexy in a woman into Kate's character. And I think she's my only character that I've ever actually quite fancied.
You have a crush on a character?
I do. I have a crush on somebody that I created. So I don't know.
She's like your perfect woman?
I think she probably is, yeah.
You have to go and read her story again.
She's got...
I know what Claire Leighton's perfect woman's like.
Apart from my wife, of course, who is my absolute perfect woman. But, you know, she's got cool clothes, ace job, she's witty, she cooks, she's sexy, she's just effortless. Love Kate. So actually, basically, the follow-up was written because I love Kate. And then, but then even then, it was just a follow-up to London Calling. It wasn't a series. But then I decided I'd write another one, but I hadn't set up the next character to write. So then I had to write somebody who was in This London Love, which was Tanya. He was an absolute terror in This London Love. She caused all manner of issues for Meg. And so when I wrote Tanya's story, quite a lot of people throw the book against the wall at that point, because they don't want to read about Tanya, because she was a baddie in This Line of Love. But I love Tanya now, because her redemption story in A Girl Called London is brilliant. But I did have a reader email me recently. He said that she couldn't carry on reading A Girl Called London because Tanya reminded her too much of her ex. And I said to her, you need to carry on reading to the end because Tanya comes good. But even then, I still didn't have the next book set up. I haven't learned.
What book number are we on?
It wasn't until book 5 that I set up the next character. And then book 6, I've set up 2 possible characters. So, yeah, series. I plan them is my advice. Plan them out, everyone.
Are you saying you wrote 4 books in the series that weren't ever plotted as a series?
Mm-hmm.
I thought the beginning of my series was kind of weird, but I think think you take the cake on that one.
The thing is, obviously, the London Romance series, they're all standalone books, but they all take place in the same universe. The universe is London. So I could set up all the different couples. They don't all live in the same area. So they live in different areas of London, and they all sort of wander in and out of the books, which is another key facet that you have to have in these books. But because they can all be standalone, I think I probably named it the London Romance series maybe at book 3. And then went back and named it. So I knew it was going to be a series then, but I still hadn't consciously worked out that you had to set up the character that you were then going to write the next book about in the book that you were writing. It just happened that there was another character, but she was straight. So then I had to make her gay in the next book.
Well, naturally. Yeah. I mean, you only had one choice.
But I think probably my subconscious knew that because there was this thing where she's Tanya's best friend, Alice. And the joke in book 3 was that Tanya didn't fit the lesbian stereotype, whereas Alice did. Alice was an art teacher who, you know, wore jeans and check shirts, whereas Tanya was a barrister who wore power suits and heels. So it's Alice was kind of set up to fall for a woman.
So she finally got in touch with her inner dyke.
She did. Yeah. She finally realised why she'd been buying so many check shirts. But what I say about series, though, so that's my London Romance series. So don't do as I do. Plan your series. The next series, I'm going to really plan it, TB. But yeah, I think the best way to do a series is always to do them as standalone books, but they're connected by the universe and the different characters coming in and out. Because if you do that, each one can be a standalone romance in its own right, and that's the formula that most readers like. It's like them meeting and falling in love, but always have returning characters, because that is also what readers love and what I love to read when I'm reading a series as well, because it's like catching up with old friends. And I get so many emails telling me that I love reading your next book in the London series because it's like catching up with old friends. So you always have to have in your books a scene that's a party or a wedding or a celebration or a get together of some sort, so that your old characters can come into the new book and then all your readers will be happy.
See, I had a different journey to my first series, because when I first started studying indie publishing, and everyone was like, if you want to make money, if you want to have a successful career, you need to write a series. And I was like, I don't really want to write a series. So I published A Woman Lost. And then I published another book after that that was totally, I think we talked about it, totally off market and the worst decision I could make. Because I studied the market so well. But I was getting so many emails about A Woman Lost and like, what happens next with Lizzie and Sarah and everything. And so when they were like, is there going to be a continuation? My first response was, no, I don't want to write another book in this series, or in this, I don't want to write another Lizzie book. But I kept getting emails and kept getting emails, and I was like, all right, maybe I should not be so stubborn about this. So I wrote the next book, and then I got more emails. What happens next? What happens next? It became a thing where I just kept writing series, and unlike your London series, this one, I try to write it so they can be standalone. So if you pick up book 4, I try to give enough of the backstory to understand it. But if you really, truly want to understand Lizzie, you got to go from the prequel all the way to the end. I don't suggest that. I don't suggest that at all, because it's kind of a hard thing to say, because Lizzie is very popular with my fans, and I think Lizzie has helped start my career. But it's also been one of those characters that's been in my head way too long, and with series, especially ones that are kind of more tied in, that not intended as standalones, but in the same lesbian universe, you do get fall off from each book to the next book. So each book you publish, you're already expecting to make less, which is not ideal when you are supporting yourself through your writing. I think I confused when everyone said you need to write a series, and then I was getting all these emails asking me what happens next. I think sometimes you just have to stand your ground and be like, what do you think happens next? And not actually write the story, because you can get in this trap. And I fell in this trap a few times with some of my other series, and there's this one series. Well, no, there's two series where I've published, and they just really have not broken even. And people, like the diehard fans of these series, want more in it. And I'm like, I'm going to have to take time out of my schedule to write them, because I set them up to where they would be a series, but they don't make money. And so I've gotten myself into trouble. Mm. And I haven't quite figured out a way of how to get out of that trouble I forced myself into.
I think that's a really good point, actually. And I think that I've certainly got these emails as well about various books I've done, particularly The Long Weekend, actually, which I always say is my cult classic. But, you know, and I still get emails, you know, more often than you think for a book that came out nearly 5 years ago, asking what happens next for Jerry, who's kind of the lead character in that, the only singleton, because she meets someone on the train on the way home. And I think in my head, I was like, well, if this book goes well, I might write a follow-up. It was never going to be a series, but I might write a follow-up. But it didn't go as well as I thought, and so I decided not to. And you can get these emails, but always remember that you've got to be excited about writing that book. And if you're not, then it probably is going to show and it won't sell as well. And so you can get these emails, but you don't always have to act on them. At the end of the day, your readers want you to write a book that you're excited about. So don't fall into that trap. And that's not to say that I haven't fallen into that trap, because that's exactly what happened with the All I Want series. I wrote All I Want for Christmas. Everybody wanted to know what happened next. And so I decided that was a completely different one. I wrote that series completely about the same couple and 2 years of their relationship. So it was very different. It wasn't a new romance every time. It was actually the evolution of their romance. And so they went through life's ups and downs. One of them nearly got killed. One of them got busted for drugs. Then one of them had a career change. They had a long distance relationship. So that was very different. And that was a challenge and probably one that I wouldn't do again. But you live, you learn, don't you? I wouldn't suggest doing that, because I think the general wisdom is have a new story, have a new romance every time. If you're writing romance, have a new one every time so they can be standalone. And like your Lizzie series, I think you said it can kind of be standalone, but the All I Want series is not standalone. Read it from the beginning. That was one mistake. The second mistake is the Christmas book is the first one. So people are not as likely to read a Christmas book if it's not Christmas. So that's not very marketable. Don't do that. But I remember reading the way to keep a series like that fresh, and I guess it's what you do with these standalone, more standalone series, is just to introduce new characters in every episode or book. And that's what I did with the All I Want series.
I tried to do that with Lizzie, but it got to the point where I have so many characters in that. Whenever I send the book off to Stephanie Murphy to narrate it, I'm like, I am so sorry. There are so many characters now, and the story has gotten really convoluted because it does follow them through quite a lot of ups and downs in life, because that's what life is. I mean, you're going along smoothly, everything's, and then all of a sudden, like, your brother gets arrested. Like, I mean, and then all of a sudden, everything goes to hell. But yeah, and then as you go through life, you know, like, some of your friends, like, you, they kind of fall off, and you make new friends and everything. So I was trying to show all this, but it just got... the universe just got so big for me there, where I was like, oh, how do I wrap this all up? And that was the struggle I had at the end of last year, was wrapping up Lizzie. And I was like, I got so many threads. So, yeah. Do you ever feel like our podcast really is basically, don't do what we do?
Yes. But the next series...
stuff we did wrong.
You know, we've learned so much, TB. The next series we write is going to be brilliant, isn't it? But I think as well, you make a good point about, you know, falling into the trap of writing something that your readers want, that you're not necessarily so jazzed about writing. But also, you do have to think about, if this is something that you're doing to make money and make a living, does it sell? If it's not selling, don't keep going. You can stop. Just don't promise your readers, don't make promises to your readers that you might not be able to keep. And I would say that if you're writing a new series, maybe sort of think of it as in doing a trilogy. That would probably be what I'm going to do with the next one. Do a trilogy, and if that sells, then you could write another three. But don't say you're going to write a 9-book series, and then the first three don't sell, and then, you know, sort of plod along. And as you say, every book that you write in a series sells less. That's generally what happens. However, in saying that, so you might not make quite as much money on it, but in saying that, books in a series, readers like them because they know where to go next. So you'll read through. So if somebody buys London Calling, they're sort of quite likely to go on and read the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. So that's where series are good, because they hook readers in if you've written a good series. But initially, you won't sell as many every time you launch one. But the read through generally just is worth it.
That is is a good point, because I have noticed, especially with the Lizzie series, each time I release a Lizzie book, like the new release may not be like that banner release, but when I look at the numbers for the rest of the series, it does do quite well.
Yes.
And like you said, with do it as a trilogy, because I have a couple other series I need to wrap up, and there's two books in each of those. And I'm like, I'll just write one more, make it a trilogy, and then I can not get myself into this trouble again. It's hard to resist, and especially when you're a new writer, when you're getting emails, and they're like, oh my gosh, I love this couple, what's going to happen next? It's very flattering. You feel like you're making an impact, and then you fall into this trap, and you're like, uh-oh.
Yes.
So don't do it, people. Resist.
Because no. I think as well, you know, everyone always says, writing a series. However, my standalone books also sell well, and I think for me, I would tend to buy standalones before I'd buy a series, because I don't want to fall into a series trap, I suppose. As a reader, I feel like, you know, the writer's trying to trap me into reading more books. However, I'm willingly fall into that trap. But I also like standalone, so it's good to have a mix of both, I think. The next series I do will be planned, because I think probably you plan your standalones and you plan the ending, and you know that's going to be the ending. And even if you get emails, you're like, you're not going to write a follow-up. That's not going to happen.
Now, we've obviously been bashing getting involved in series because we've had experience with it. But I do believe, and do you think there are certain genres where you should write series?
Well, I was going to say, I wouldn't say we've been bashing it. I do have like a fondness for Torin Holly and the All I Want series. And I'm actually quite proud of that series, because it wraps up and it's neat. And a lot of people do say to me, are you ever going to go back to Torin Holly? And I always say, no.
So you were the smart one. I don't want the listeners to think that I hate my characters. I really do like them, but it's just hard to maintain the same shiny new feel from the first book.
Yes. And I think that's why, you know, I do love writing the London romance series, because it's nice for me to check in on the old characters as well as writing a brand new romance. But your original question was, are there genres that you should write in a series? Yes, I think there are. Like, for instance, fantasy. If you're writing fantasy novels, or science fiction, or paranormal, those sort of ones, Harry Potter-esque, things like that, they kind of demand, fantasy readers want a series. Crime stuff is quite good for series. So if you're writing those, romance, I think, it's not as acknowledged as writing in series, but there's plenty of series knocking around in romance in general, and lesbian romance too. So I think it's a good thing. I think if you're writing and reading, have a mix. That's what I do as a writer and a reader.
Yeah, that's what my new plan is, because obviously my next book is going to be a Lizzie book, and after it's going to be a standalone, and then I need to tie up another series. So I'm going to kind of go back and forth with it a bit. So that's what I'm planning to do. Mm. But also it depends on, I'm getting to the point where I don't like to force a story if I'm not feeling it. So if I start a book and I'm not feeling it, I will set it aside for a bit and start something else that I'm more excited to tell. And then I can go back. Mm-hmm. That's how I worked on this Lizzie book, because I think I started this latest Lizzie book early last year. I hit a wall and I put it aside, and I was able to pick it up, and I think it turned out to be a much better book than originally. So, and I think, I can't remember who it was I was watching on one of the podcasts. I think it was, she writes fantasy paranormal stuff. And she was saying, because she has a lot of series, and she was saying her fans get kind of frustrated with her, because they're like, oh, I want the next book in this series. And she's like, no, I'm not feeling that one. I'm going to do this one. But she's like, but my fans are like, they're my fans, so they still follow me and everything. So I think you kind of have to follow, even though it might disappoint some, in the long run, I think it's going to be better for you and for your fans if you write the book you really want to write.
Yes. Yeah. But as I said, it does come back again to managing expectations. So if you said to your readers that you're going to do this book in this series and then you don't do it, they're going to be disappointed. So manage expectations. Don't promise things because you, like TB says, you don't know where you're going to go with a series, and you might stop it because it's not selling, or you might stop it because you're not feeling it right there and then, but you will come back to it. I remember Eliza Lenski. She wrote what's her series called? Winter Jacket. And I think there's like four or five books in that. And I remember interviewing her for my other podcast I do. And she said that she writes that book, one of those books a year. And so she writes it and she releases it in the same, around the same time. And she said that she gets a lot of emails from fans saying, oh, we want the next Winter Jacket book. But she said that she just said they wait. They have to wait because I can only write one a year and I only start it at a certain point. And I think she gives herself, you know, a year to write it so that it, then maybe if she's not feeling it, she can go to another book. I don't know. I can't quite remember. But I remember she only does it once a year. And so she's like, you know, they'd be happier if I could do three books a year in that series, but it's not going to happen. So, yeah, you have to do what's right for you. I think as well that we have to say on the upside of series. So I may well have fallen into the London Romance series by accident, but it's absolutely the best thing that I've ever done. Not just like the books are the best thing I've ever done, but it's kind of like what I'm known for. And I'm all right with that. You know, it's like people see me, oh, that's Claire Lydon, what writes those London books. I'm absolutely fine with that. And also, like we said, the read through is very good on them. So if someone reads London Calling, they're likely to go through and read all the other five, which is great because then they're invested in me as an author. And then they might go on and read my standalones and my other series. And also it's good for my bank balance. So the other thing that you think of as well is with series, you can put them in a box set. So that's another good thing of doing a trilogy. So you can then put that in a box set so readers have another way of reading it, and maybe you can discount it a little bit so that they're more likely to buy. With the London Romance and All I Want, you can buy the box sets 1 to 3, 4 to 6 or 1 to 6 and get even more discount. Wow, what a great deal. And make sure you've got consistent covers and consistent titles. That's really important with series as well. So on the London Romance series, I did not have consistent covers at first. I had three different, completely different covers, and they didn't look like a series. So after number three, I realised I was going to write more. I cottoned on to my own series. And so I think that must be when I put it in a series, actually, after book three. So then I got my cover designer to redesign the whole series, and now they look like a series. So that's really important. And also, every book's got London in the title so that they're recognisable.
Yeah, it was hard for me because mine was A Woman Lost, and like cramming woman into each title was a challenge.
It doesn't.
I remember going to the pub quite a few times with my partner, having a few beers. How can we put woman in this title? So that's another thing when you are thinking of writing a series. Make sure the first title can easily be interchanged.
Yeah, don't limit yourself by saying you're going to have one word, the same word in a title, because it is limiting. It does make you creative, but it is limiting. I think the next series I write again is not going to have a single word in the title. So that would be good. The other really key thing for series is have a Bible. Do you have Bibles for your series?
Yes. Yeah, maybe. I keep losing them, but yes.
So I don't think I had one until about book five in the London Romance series, and I just thought, oh my god, I can't remember what anyone is called, where they live, what colour their eyes are, how old they'd be. You know, like you have to think, how long has it been since book one? So I created a Bible for myself. I read through the entire series and created a Bible, and that's invaluable, actually. So have a Bible so you remember who's got what Meghan Kate's son is called. He's called Finn and he's 3. I know this because I've got a Bible. And the other really good thing to do, which really rewards fans of series, is put Easter eggs in the book that will really, really please them. So have you done this in your books as well, TB?
Probably not intentionally, no. Do I seem like the planner?
So, for instance, you'll be surprised to know that this scene takes place in Kate and Meg's flat.
I'm going to have to read this book.
In book two, This London Love, and actually, no, probably in book one as well, London Calling, Jess and Kate are flatmates. So Kate, they've got an upstairs flat and Kate has a bike. And it's a constant source of thing, like everyone keeps coming in and tripping on the bike, or like she's constantly shouting, mind the bike. And and so in book five, or book six, actually, Heidi takes her son or her daughter around for Kate and Meg to babysit. And when she opens the door, Kate says, oh, mind the bike. And that's a little Easter egg, you see. That's an example of something that people will remember from book two, from books one and two, and then they get to book six and there's another reminder of it. And it makes them feel part of a club. It makes them feel part of a community that they know these people better than other readers might. And actually, it's really pleasing for me to do as the writer too.
I love that you said the series Bibles are perfect, and you couldn't remember the sex of the child. What book it was in.
And that was a book I only brought out in October.
It's funny, though, because I do realize with the readers of series, they remember everything. And then when I sit down to write it, I'm like, what's this person's name again? What do they do for a living? And I put, like, little notes in, because I have the same editor who's worked on the Lizzie series, and I'm always like, does Lizzie have a certain cell phone? Did I ever mention an iPhone, or did I say phone? Or, and, like, she just laughs because she's, like, she's just used to me now. We're like, I need to look this up in the previous book. I have to do this. I don't know. I don't remember what this person's name is or anything about it. But the reader, they somehow remember everything. It's so amazing to me.
Yeah, no, it is amazing, and it's also very flattering. You know, that people invest their time and energy into a universe that you've created, which is, it's, there's nothing nicer than that. In fact, for my London Romance series, one very lovely reader who is a, I think she's in the Navy, she's on like a submarine, and while she was on the submarine, she drew me a chart of all the relationships that happened in the London Romance series, which I thought was amazing. It's like a bit like Alice's chart on the L Word.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. That's pretty amazing. And was it like really convoluted, like Alice's chart?
I don't know. It was pretty cool. There's not that many people sleep with each other. The different people. I suppose that's the difference. It was more like connections. They weren't sexual connections.
Oh. I was like, what kind of romance are you writing?
Yeah, exactly. There can't be too much cheating or getting into bed with the wrong partner. Oh, slipped. I slipped into the wrong vagina. Apologies. Backing out. For romance, you don't generally need a big overarching story arc. Maybe you did for stuff like the Lizzie book. I'm assuming that you did have a bigger story arc, as well as the story arcs for each individual book. But for like the London Romance series, I didn't need that. But for the All I Want series, I did. They needed to be an overarching story arc. That's a very difficult phrase to say. But have you got any tips, like, you know, if you're starting a new series now, which I think, you know, you may well do in the future, are there do's that you would definitely do?
I would be much kinder to myself and not create such complicated universes with so many characters. You don't need so many characters in a romance. I mean, if you're writing a cozy mystery, yeah, you're going to need the red herrings and everything. You don't need red herrings in a romance. So I would make the universe a bit more simple. I would make it so they're not all tied together, like I said, because going back and rereading, I think I had to reread 7 books in the Lizzie book for book 8, which is the final book. And that's time consuming.
Yeah.
And then it's also kind of painful because you're like, oh, why did you use that word yet again? I was cracking up because I think it was last week on Twitter where you put up a sentence you wrote. I didn't mean to demean the meaning of Christmas. I was like, that's awesome. Because how many of us have done that without even realizing it until we sit down? We're like, what the fuck is this sentence?
No, I actually did realize that as soon as I wrote it. That was like, you know, I read, you know, when you write something and I just read it straight back. Yeah, I didn't mean to demean the meaning of Christmas. Wow. Brilliant. I should work with words. Yes. But yeah, I agree. I think the key is, as with anything, is rich characters and characters that are different. So give them quirks and make them rich and three-dimensional. And that's what readers remember. Readers remember characters and readers remember how you made them feel. Think about when you read a book. It's the feeling you get that people remember. So plan out your characters and give them depth. And plan out the books, who the books will be about. Remember the story arcs for each individual book and the overarching story arc if you need one. Plan where it's going to be set, your world, maybe give it a theme. Because I think as well, the next series I don't think it's going to be location-based. I think it will be thematic.
Mm-hmm. Do you have like a certain idea of what kind of
thing? Absolutely no idea at all. I haven't begun to think about it. But I suppose this year, I know what the 4 books I'm writing. Next year will be, I'll start a new series, but not this year. So I've got this year to sort of think about it. But do have loose ends that you can tie up later on. But like TB says, don't have too many of them. Otherwise, yes, you will strangle yourself with all the all the loose ends that you're trying to tie up. You'll tie your feet together and then you'll try and get up and you'll fall over. That's what TB's been doing lately, isn't it?
Yeah, go back and listen to the past 10 episodes of how much I have been whining about Lizzie.
And as we said, start with three and then work up if things are going well. But if things are not, then change tack and start. And it might not just be sales. It might just be how you're feeling about it. So it might not work out. And the other good thing to do with series is you can also discount or the first in series just to get people into it. And then if they like it, then they're hooked. And ha ha!
They are a good hook. And I do one other thing I'd like to add is make sure the character that you're focusing on a lot, make sure it's a character you like, because with Lizzie, she's been in my head for about 5 years now. You gotta really get used to having this other voice in your head constantly. So if it's a really annoying character, you're gonna go crazy.
This is true. And also make sure that the main character is likable and that people can relate. Because if you set them up to be a bit annoying, then people aren't going to want to carry on reading.
Yeah, that's one of the comments I get a lot about Lizzie is like, oh, I can relate to her so much because she's a bit socially awkward and she gets herself into like really weird situations when there's other people around. And it's just kind of funny because I'm always like, oh, what is Lizzie going to say now? Because I never know. And then I'm like, oh, gosh, that's almost painful to write. but the reader really likes it because they're just cringing like, oh, I can't believe she did that. So, yeah. People really like to be able to relate to characters. I mean, you can have like an evil character in your book, but don't make it your main character.
Yeah, don't do what I did in book three of the London Romance series and make Tanya your main character.
I was surprised you did that because I remember when you started sharing about that, I think, were you doing your newsletter then?
Probably not, I can't remember.
I don't remember how I heard about it. I was like, this is going to be a challenge for Claire. I wonder how she's going to pull it off.
And I think I'm pretty pleased with how I did it, actually. I think by the end of that book and then book four as well, I think Tanya is one of my favourite characters in the London series because her journey has been the biggest.
That's what I like. And I get comments from my editor because I just think most people are redeemable. And so even the characters, some of the characters were like, people are like, oh, I really don't like this character. And I'm like, how can I make that change? Because I don't like to give up on people. Mm. And so, and my editor is always like, no, stop doing this. What I do have to say with one of the characters in the Lizzie book, this character, I won't say who it was. This character has been kind of a fucking asshole the entire time. And my editor finally wrote in the column at the very end of the last Lizzie book, you finally made me like this character. And I was like, well, that's great. That was my goal.
See, I suppose that's the other key thing with series is you can get more in depth and you can really spin the story out and give it depth and give it time to breathe. And then you can turn a character around. And these are things that you can't do as well in a 70,000 word novel. But if you've got six of them, seven of them, eight of them, nine of them, 27 of them. You're going to write a 27 book series soon, TB?
Can you imagine?
You can really flesh out that character. So you can really go to town. So that's another really big strength of a series is that you can really grip readers and they want to know what happens next to that character because they're so invested. They've already read seven books. They want the next one. So that's brilliant. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap this one up now because we've been blathering on for quite a while. But I hope you found the series chat helpful and it's given you some ideas. I know it's actually given me some ideas. So that's good, isn't it? Next week, we've got a real treat of an episode for you. We're going to be talking about where we've placed sex scenes in our fiction, the strangest places or the most unusual places. And I've had to explain to TB that this is fiction and not real life. But she might stray into real life and tell you different places she's had sex. So it's going to be an interesting one, isn't it, TB?
I'm glad we have the X-rated rating on our thing.
So we'll see you next week for sex chat. See you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Lesbians Who Write. Listen in every week for more conversations on writing and lesbian fiction. And you can make sure you never miss an episode by signing up to our newsletter at lesbianswhowrite.com. Also, if you could take a moment to leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast, it would help more people to discover us. Thanks so much and see you next time.